7.
And she'd like
And it is 9:07 a.m. We are starting off for our county admin workshop. First up, it's Thursday, June 13th, 2019. All three commissioners are present. First up on the agenda, Department Business Emergency Services, a grant agreement between Joseph County and Grants Pass Department of Public Safety Fire Response Division. And who's bringing that one?
Looks like nobody.
All right, we're skipping it. We're going to move on to juvenile justice. Renewal of existing IGA for BRS services provided by Turning Point Youth Residential Program.
Lucky all.
Didn't we just do this last week or the week before?
This was.
It's like deja vu again, all over again.
This is the counterpart, Department of Human Services, IGA.
Okay.
They're both the state of Oregon. The one we did last week or week before was with the Oregon Youth Authority. Two different IGAs for two different state agencies. I know it's redundant, but that's our world. So to cut it down, page 2 is the not to exceed amount. So we have a daily bed rate for kids that are in our residential treatment center. You see the not to exceed for the biennium of $831,240.76.
Are you going to get anywhere near there?
No, we'll get nowhere. That's actually based on about a 6-bed average just for that one agency. We only usually have 3 to 4 of their youth at a time. But this does give us leeway.
Gives you a little wiggle room in case they do go to 6.
Yeah, exactly.
So these are those kids that are essentially in the foster program.
Correct.
That don't have a foster placement that right. They're needing emergency bedding
so,
for.
So they could
it's
be...
the residential program.
Yes, a lot of them, they just don't work out in foster care. They've blown out of this home and this home and this home and this home, and so they wind up in our level, which is kind of the next level up.
Where do they go from there?
Well, if
I mean,
we
can't house them
if
forever,
we do our job,
that doesn't become a dormitory.
Correct. If we do our job, we get them stabilized and back into foster care.
Enough to go
or
back
maybe
into
back into their
Have you ever shipped anybody out to Eastern Oregon to work on a ranch for a summer?
There used to be such a program.
Well, that's strange. I mean, that would straighten anybody out.
Cowboy out?
Those cowboys don't put up
was
any shenanigans whatsoever.
Klamath Youth Ranch, which was out of Bonanza. We
Good
actually
name.
Used to use that for juvenile cases. We could send kids over there. That was a working alfalfa potato, you know, ranch. But
you need to go over there and work the cows,
right?
Yeah.
So again, this is just a renewal, same IGA we've had since I've been in the business.
No idea what we're talking about.
Any questions?
No.
Awesome. Good job.
I still don't know why we don't have legal counsel at all meetings if questions come up for process.
They have reviewed this, by the way.
That's not the point.
Okay.
Does it go to consent calendar? Does it go to admin that you have to fully present? It's an existing program, but it's a new IGA because of the biennium. It requires a new IGA, but it's an extension of something that's budgeted. I say it goes to consent.
That's what we did with the last one.
All right.
This is an example of the new signing rules. We would not have, we could eliminate this piece.
Right.
But we have to wait for that work group you volunteer to be on member.
Exactly. And we have a lot of these, so I'm more than happy to be on that group.
To shorten the cycles?
Yes.
Yes.
Awesome.
All right.
Thank you,
sir.
John, up next is our information technology branding update. I've texted the department head that was supposed to be the first presentation.
And waiting upon a response.
Good morning, commissioners. So we're moving along in the branding process with the anticipation that we will be fairly close by fair time. We are looking for input from the board about how we roll this thing out. And some thoughts have been the fair is an ideal opportunity to do that kind of community outreach, to communicate that to the community about what we're doing, why we're doing it, and then when we get the new website going, to really roll it out, set people up with what we're doing and where it is. And so we're looking for some feedback on does that work for you? to roll it out at the fair. Any ideas on what we would be doing? Where our thoughts are getting polos for the staff that man the or staff the county booth.
Mm-hmm. Maybe we determine we're going to have a county booth.
Yes.
Apparently, the managers did at the manager meeting on Monday last week.
Good.
Glad to have a booth. And would we be able to sell some swag at that? Whether it be or handout, I think in T-shirts, keychains, whatever, keychains with a little bottle opener or a light or something to help roll out that brand.
So historically, when the county used to have a booth, the county never provided shirts during the year. It wasn't something the county spent money on. But if you
for employees.
Okay. But if you volunteered at the fair booth, you would get a T-shirt or a polo, and so that's how you could build up your Friday wear.
Your casual
Friday wear.
Is that a thing? Because I got some casual stuff I could wear on a Friday. I didn't know it was a thing.
We wear it every day. Casual Friday.
This is casual Thursday.
But that was traditionally kind of thing. And then at some point, with the cuts in personnel and everything, that process stopped. That's when the county stopped having a booth. Public health has kept a booth going the last few years, but we haven't had a county booth. So this would be the first year of the county booth. In years past, commissioners had to authorize personnel getting paid. So they would say, if you work the booth, you can flex your time.
Right.
So that was something that commissioners previously approved, and the person would get a pass to get in.
So that's still pre-approved then?
No.
No, you have to do it every year?
We haven't had a booth in 10 years.
But can't we recommend that they can work the booth?
I've managed this 2 years ago.
What'd you say?
That employees, county employees, work the booth and they just take it off of their vacation pay, their vacation time.
No, they
would just go ahead and donate their vacation time to work on the booth because that's like being on vacation.
Okay. I'll let you take that up with staff. So I just heard Commissioner DeYoung volunteer to work 4 hours every day.
He did not.
He will be the only one there.
No. I refuse to fill out a volunteer sheet. Sorry. No can do.
I've already volunteered to be in the booth at some point.
So, you know, it's one of those things that the main part of the thought is that the whole reason we even went down this was because of our website. And the new website is coming. It's going to be out, we're hoping, October. And so the thought was to promote that we have a new name for the website. Or my thought was.
Right.
That we actually, the justification of why did we go down this path was because we had to get something that could go on the website. Because the triangle that we use, wherever it is, couldn't be recreated without being remade.
And really shouldn't be.
It was way too busy.
We'd yank it out of the
70s. And so that's how we got down this process. Yeah. So instead of focusing on we did a new brand, the idea was, but it was we're rolling out a new website. So coming October 2019, josephinecounty.gov, and promoting that in the booth, and
right.
then having the brand stuff. So only, I thought shirts only for staff, because that's traditionally was something we had reserved for them. If you guys, and I don't know how we would compete for the city giving out their swag. They make you win a game.
Right, play,
and only if you get 100% do you get a t-shirt. So they don't just give them out to everyone. But they had 11,000 visitors to the booth. So if you want enough stuff for every person that comes by to walk away with stuff, there's going to be an expense. There's there's potential, but you can look at everything from lanyards, keychains, anything, water bottles to the thing. And Jason's going to be meeting with the local vendor to kind of see what the opportunities are and what the costs potentially were. But we didn't want to go forward without the blessing of the board to even go that route.
Yeah,
working the city's booth, I noticed that because it's always hot during fair, the little fans would, you know, the fan would be big enough to have our logo on it, you know, and dominate it. And supplying bottled water there, you know, I mean, a cups with water.
Yeah, we had a water dispenser.
Well, the water dispensary like we have in here.
The city provides water, and they have employees that bring that multiple times a day from the water plant, that they fill that up from the filtration plant. So they have no expense to bring water, and they're already providing it to everybody that walks through that same building that's going to be a few booths away. To pay for water to offer to the public when they're providing it already, I don't know that we would want that expense.
I'm just saying that's what they do.
Right.
We don't have to do that. We
I don't
can
want
give
to
away
do what they do.
Cranberry juice from that.
Well, and I think it'll build to be more interactive, but I think it's the perfect opportunity to roll out the brand. I think we should have a few things to give away, whether it be fans, keychains, something with the brand on it. But I'd also like to sell T-shirts to people that want to buy one, because I think with the new brand, some people would. And then we could bring whatever, if we bought 100 of them or whatever, whatever else we could bring into this office and sell. Because there has to be something more than a county employee standing there. Hey, we got a new brand coming out in October.
Yeah, and I don't know what the managers were hoping for. I mean, is it multiple departments, multiple things? Is the public health locating? Usually the animal shelter has portions of these are the adoptable animals right now.
If I may answer that, I was attempting to spearhead the booth functionality. It was brought to me, the idea, by Mike Weber about a month ago, and I tried to just start running with it and see who was interested. I brought it up at the manager's meeting to make sure we would have volunteers, because to my mind, I knew we already had some funds that could be used for it if approved, but the trouble was going to be staffing, since for 4 days it has to be staffed for 12 hours by at a minimum two people. So that's why I brought it up to the manager's meeting. It seems like there was a good input there as far as indication to move forward, or at least get the board's approval to move forward. So that's kind of where, that's why that was on the agenda for that meeting.
And that's for one booth to be shared by the county?
So my suggested plan, and we've got a booth set aside for us if we...
Where is it? Do you know? It's in the commercial building.
It's in the commercial building. I don't know the exact location, but it was the last 10 by 20 that Tamara had available. Okay. But my concept so far, and it's still kind of coming together, would be that we would share it amongst departments and come up with a schedule. So maybe for 4 to 6 hours, one day we have the sheriffs come in and they show off some of their tools. And we kind of partner that with either myself or one of the commissioners there to talk about countywide specifics. Public health, I know, would be excited about that. Forestry, I think, would probably come in and show off some of their equipment.
So you're not going to be able to move equipment in and out every day. The setup is the night before the fair starts. Most people move their stuff in, and whatever you bring in is what you have for the week. As far as tear down the booth and set it up every day, you're going to find more work than is worth.
Okay.
You might see about, I mean, if there are some specifics.
Bring in your handouts. You bring in a box of handouts.
Yeah, or, you know, kind of.
Forestry or whatever.
They don't bring the kittens because it's traumatic for the animals to have so many people, but they bring the pictures. Or
I was thinking like a chainsaw, maybe? Is that?
That would be awesome.
Like forestry, if they use those.
But is it a 10-foot wide, 20-foot deep that you lose half the booth? I mean, we're used to the wide ones versus the long ones.
It's 20 by 10 would be what the city has.
Right.
And there's 10 by 10s. They're all 10 foot deep.
They're all 10 feet deep.
Okay.
But they're 20 foot, you know, like the...
So it is a wide one.
20,
so you could...
20 wide, and, they, and the city's 20
feet of frontage.
Yeah.
We had a tractor in 1 year.
Yeah.
And definitely, I think that there's people that come by, and some will come multiple times and see what you have or see what's new. So there's some things that would be there, but if the sheriff wants to bring toys, in the past when they had canine, they would bring the dogs at different times. Friends of the canine would have a display. They usually were outside, though.
With the little plastic gloves.
Yeah, I mean, and do you bring in all the... I'm thinking about search and rescue and... Posse, I mean, if you wanted to have a sheriff's day or something like that, but usually people set up for the full week, the stuff that's there. Mm-hmm.
And the fair theme is honoring veterans, and we should have Josephine County honored veterans somewhere in the booth.
And I know the Veterans certainly. Department will have their own booth.
Yeah,
as well.
Like heavy into it. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think Elise is planning a booth of her own, I think, our Veterans Department. It's going to come together, but I think we've got to concentrate on what you can come up with some ideas of what handouts would be and so on and so forth, what gee dunk you're going to give out.
So we'd like to do some research, come to the board with a budget. I don't know if economic development would have that money. We're not talking a large chunk of money, but
I'm sure we could find something, because we want this one to be a success for sure.
Does the our logo have Oregon on it anywhere? Josephine County, Oregon?
No.
Not at all.
No. But we're the only Josephine County in the country.
We could have
except for a band
mask.
In Florida, I think.
Put the logo on it.
A band?
They come up in my Google searches.
What's that?
There's a band called Josephine County. Sometimes.
They're probably from here.
Heavy metal.
Folk, reggae. I think?
Folk?
Folk country, something along that line.
I figured it was going to be the guy with the juice harp and the one string play on a washboard and stuff.
So I would recommend that at the levels that we'd be requesting that they can work either with their liaison or directly with you with economic development, that I don't know that it...
Has to come back. Yeah.
So we'll pursue that.
Does it have to? I don't think it needs to be something official.
Sounds good.
If you got the blessing.
Okay. I'll take the blessing.
Well, bless you then.
Run with it. And so you'll start scheduling folks and days and...
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Good. Well, count me in for an evening.
Wonderful.
Yep.
Saturday?
I'd have to ask my wife, but Saturday's fine.
I think Saturday's going to be the tough one to get volunteers for, but we'll find out.
The key was getting the passes for people to get in, and that's always a...
Yeah.
I don't remember if we did parking pass and two tickets at time. Yeah.
I'll talk to
someone. You can get, when we were doing it, I'm going to be driving a golf cart, but they give you a pass and you can pass that off to somebody else. If I'm not going to use it anymore, give it to another employee and they can go. Huh. The passes, we get the pass, but we don't need to keep it for all weekend. I'm only going to go out there while I'm working.
So our role will be to coordinate that stuff and then
bring it. Thank you. Okay. Sounds like a future success.
Thank you very much.
All right, up next is transportation. We have four items. The ODOT Agreement 33490, STF Josephine County. The Rail and Public Transit Division ODOT Agreement 33424. The State of Oregon IGA number 160388. And the Second Amendment IGA between City of Grants Pass and County of Josephine, Oregon, pedestrian access to transit. Scott Chancey, welcome.
Good morning. Thank you. Rather than bring these one at a time, I figured it would be in everyone's best interest to just stack them all at once. I think I have two more left. I'm waiting for them to come from ODOT. So I was just going to go through these one by one if anybody has any questions.
Sure.
These are grant agreements that we get reoccurring year after year after year with either ODOT or DHS. And then the last one is this IGA with the City of Grants Pass. This is actually the second amendment to that, and all it's doing is extending the date. But anyway, I'll go through these one by one. So the very first one that's up is ODOT agreement number... I'm going to put my glasses on.
33490.
That's it, 33490, and it's STF, which stands for Special Transportation Funds, or the funds that are allocated from the state via tobacco tax and a gas tax on small engines. And it's dedicated to elderly and disabled transportation.
Gas tax on small engines. That's like agricultural. You buy agricultural diesel or anything like that?
It's like if you go to...
Non-oxygenated for lawnmowers or something?
That's exactly what it is. So that's a portion of it, and then the rest of it comes from...
But there's only a couple of places in town that do that.
I don't know how it got thrown in there. This first started, I know it was 25 cents on the tobacco tax was dedicated to it. So at the state level, they kept just putting a little bit of money back and forth in there. These funds are dedicated specifically for that. They don't come from the general fund. Okay. So it generates $204,000 a year. For us, that's not. There's no match requirement,
and no requirement where it can be spent.
The only requirement where it can be spent is it has to be for elderly and disabled transportation.
Okay,
that's all that they.
But it can be spent for supplying a bus driver for that.
Correct. There's no limitation on that. As long as it's going into a transit program or something specifically.
Can it go into big battery chargers for buses?
It could.
All right.
So what we use it for is we use it to pay for the local match requirement on all of our other federal grants. So we don't have a dedicated source local. Up to this point, we didn't have a dedicated source locally for that was match eligible. So we used these funds along with some contract funds and other things like that to go ahead and pay for our required local match. So that's how we use the funds. Okay. We expand it and leverage it for other federal grants.
So none of these are new IGAs, right? They're all just extensions of contracts?
They're new contracts. They're new contracts, but it's an existing program that happens again and again and again.
Is there any changes to any one of these, or are they the same as they were other than just what you said?
There are no changes to any of them. There's none. The only thing that changes year to year, biennium to biennium, is the dollar amount because it gets budgeted. So they might estimate that more money's going to be coming in through the tobacco tax than there was last year. There might be less money, so they go ahead and budget more. And same thing with one of the other ones here I'll talk about next. Those monies come from the Federal Transit Administration, and then they get formula fund distribution across the state. So those dollar amounts change based on that. Other than that, the program doesn't change. Okay. How we use the money doesn't change. Nothing other than that changes.
Okay.
So it's kind of redundant, but we got to do it. So the next one up is 33424. This is funds that we get from ODOT that come from the Federal Transit Administration that are for rural transportation support. So as you know, this county is split into an urbanized area as well as a rural area. So we operate within both. So these funds are to help support operations into the rural areas. Now what we do is we say that we're going to use them for administrative support of the transit program, which allows us to pay a different match rate. So if we used them for direct operational support, I know this is kind of in the weeds, but if we use them for direct operational support, the match rate is 50%. If we use them for something such as administrative support, then the match rate is only 10.27%.
It's a wider swath.
Correct. And there's some rules as to what, you know, operating consists of and things like that. So we use these for rural administrative operations support, and we get approximately a little over $100,000 a year, and the local match requirement on this one is about $10,000 a year, which is what we're kind of using.
How is that by population?
It's distributed by population. A weird formula fund from the state. So there's a base amount, then there's a certain other amount that's based on population as well as ridership that I don't agree with, but they're willing to continue to give us the money. I'm okay taking it. So that's the 50. I'm sorry, did you have a question?
Nope.
Okay, so that's the 5311. So those are both ODOT state grants specifically for our general public transit program. The next agreement is... let's make sure I got this one right. It's an IGA, again, with DHS. We had an ongoing contract that expired this year. It was covered multiple years. This is support for certain types of clients to and from activity centers, and they're eligible through the DHS for this program called DD53. We supply those clients with rides twice a day to and from activity centers, and then we charge them the full amount for that ride, and that's essentially what this contract's for. It's going to generate about $80,000 a year.
Give me an example of some place you would take somebody and what it's for.
So we would go, it's a like a deviated fixed route, so we have one driver, and rather than go and pick people up individually and take them, we put them all on one route. And so, for example, we'll go and pick some people up out here and then take them to Greenleaf when Greenleaf is open. We'll go and pick some people after Greenleaf and take them to, there's another activity center right next to the police state police station up on 7th Street. That's another one.
So is it developmentally delayed clientele? Is that what the DD is?
Essentially, yes. Okay. Yes. So there's that. We used to take people to Southern Oregon Aspire. I don't think we do that anymore. Those people are on the fixed route. There's a couple other agencies that we take people to and from every day, Monday through Friday. So it's limited. You have to be a client, and you have to be eligible for these funds. And then if so, we charge them the full amount, and then they...
This question has come up many, many times, and I don't know if we have any movement, but the Veterans Center, the Veterans mm-hmm. Clinic out there on Williams Highway, we're nowhere near that. And we don't, you know, we're doing all these special needs for all the special people in the world, the onesie-twosies, and going out of our way and supplying a driver and a bus and a this and a that, and yet we can't seem to manage to have a route out there through anywhere close to that when you got a hospital less than 3 blocks away.
Well,
you go to the hospital?
Oh, yeah, we go to the hospital. So we're within 3/4 of a mile of that veterans facility out there. So we actually hit the corner of Sonic, Walgreens. That's as close as we get with a regular fixed route. With that said, our Dial-A-Ride service goes there as well. Most veterans that are going out there qualify for our Dial-A-Ride service.
Okay, so there is something available.
There is something available.
There's something available. Okay, that's the answer.
And you've coordinated that with our veterans office. She knows it.
I would like to think they know it. Now, we're about to launch on a more informational community campaign to let people know that this Dial-A-Ride service is in existence and what it does and what it's
right.
for.
Right.
We haven't done that before. But I understand your frustration because what's interesting is there seems to be, within the transportation world, pockets of funding for specific clients, and it's really hard to find money for just general population, no trip requirement, no client requirement, none of that. That's what seems to be difficult to do. To go out further out Highway 238 past the Veterans Facility to possibly New Hope Murphy, that's on the priority list for service improvements. I think it's number 4. So it's been identified, and we definitely know that we need to get out there. It's just right now there's not a fixed route out there. There's only the Dial-A-Ride. So, again, this is another great example of some federal program that comes down that they say, okay, these funds are available for transportation for this specific group. Now, what would be great if those funds were available and came down and they said, okay, these funds are for this specific group, but if you have extra room on your vehicle, we don't care what you do with it. That would be nice. But unfortunately, those programs don't exist.
Maybe Dial-A-Ride is, though, the answer to that, because you're going to get a veteran that says, you let me off out at the curb, can't you just swing through the parking lot and let me out the front door?
That's exactly right.
And a Dial-A-Ride would be able to deliver them right to the front door.
That's exactly right.
So maybe that's the answer, instead of saying we're going to put in a route out through there where we're going to dump you off at the curb, because a lot of those old guys can't walk the length of that complex to
Correct.
Get to the VA thing.
Correct.
Maybe the Dial-A-Ride thing is the answer. I just need an answer. So, well, no, we don't do this. Say, you know, no, there's a program.
Oh, there is.
Call Dial-A-Ride and, you know, get a hold of Scott and he'll explain it to you. And maybe that's something that you can use. You know, everybody's got a phone, for Pete's sake.
Right.
So like we haven't, not like you haven't called a courier or something and then have them deliver it out to you.
You are exactly right, but I do know that I will never make everyone happy.
No, you
so
can't.
So, for as much as the Dial-A-Ride fits most people's needs, there's always someone that's going to go, why can't I have a bus? Why do I have to schedule a ride?
That just gives me an answer. So that's what right.
No,
that's
we got
I think
something.
That's probably the better way to go anyway.
And we have more plans on the way. So, again, it's unfortunate the way that the transportation world works is they don't just give us the money and allow us to do
but
what
if
we
you
think.
Did put a route out there that dropped them off at the curb, they wouldn't be eligible for Dial-A-Ride.
No, they would.
Okay. Well, because I hate to take it any further, this conversation, but doesn't Veterans Services have some sort of outreach vehicle?
They do
their own.
They
we'll grab you and bring you in. It would seem like
they have a shuttle service back because it's over to White City and back.
Sure.
And
so this is just a supplement.
Or is
from
that us. Our office
through the VA?
That service that you just talked about is somewhat infrequent, hard to figure out how to use, and so forth. But with that said, you are right, it is out there, and I'm exploring using that service to take veterans into the facility on 238 at that point, then take our Dial-A-Ride and take them wherever they need to within the community. That's what we're working on next.
Okay.
But you're exactly right. So there's a lot of things that are resources that are out there. It's just very difficult to piece them all together.
Right. And get them to complement each other so they're not duplicating a service.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. Okay.
So that's the DHS, and I think that this contract goes, goes through 2029. We charge $1,504 a ride. And that can be changed. So if all of a sudden our costs increase, we're not locked into this contract.
We'll bring an amendment.
Through 2029, exactly. Okay, and then the last one is an IGA Amendment 2 with the City of Grants Pass. This is for a sidewalk infill project that's been going on a very long time. And the reason that we're involved in this is because the money is flowing from the Federal Transit Administration, and the City of Grants Pass is not a direct recipient with the Federal Transit Administration.
So CMAQ just goes to rest now?
This one does. So the CMAQ will either come from Federal Highway or Federal Transit.
So you're
going to
do some bus shelters?
No.
The bus shelters of which we do not speak?
Yeah. No, I take care of the bus shelters on my own, make sure it's cost effective. But so this is for sidewalk infill, and they're almost done with the project. It's just I think there's a little over $400,000
left.
Sorry,
I couldn't help it.
Hey, you beat me to it. I'm proud of you.
Well, we held off to the last one.
Okay. We very rarely ever mentioned the BS word because we were all involved in it. But you know what? It comes up every once in a while.
I don't want to talk BS either.
You beat me to it. It was wheeling through my mind. How can I bite my tongue any harder? And there it came. Rose to the top just like that. I like it.
All right. Thank you, Scott, for indulging our
That's
moment.
Okay. It was a highlight of my career when the Wall Street Journal called me. Yeah. And said, hey, you know, we hear about this bus stop project. And
oh, golly.
I'm like, really?
I was in the Wall Street Journal. I had a guy call me from Daytona Beach in the morning, and he said, are you DeYoung? I said, yeah. And he says, I'm still laughing. I said, who are you? He said, I live in Daytona Beach, Florida, and I've just read your article and your comment and quoting the article in the Wall Street Journal. I went, what? Because I did talk to a guy, and I thought he was kidding. Well, he wasn't. And what I said is that for $105,000, if you supply the land, we've got contractors who will build you a 3-bedroom, 2-bath house on that location. So I would rather go that way. So if you miss the bus, you can stay overnight. And they put that in there.
Gosh.
Chuck Hansen from Horsepower TV, a good friend of mine, said, I know that guy. And he called me. Said, you're in, man.
Gosh.
So
highlight.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Does the county have any say over where the infill is? Is there any coordination with the county on best locations, or is the city just simply going to pick the spots for the infill? And
the spots have already been picked. So this has already gone through the environmental assessment. The project's already been approved by the Federal Transit Administration. The only thing that's changed is our agreement with the City of Grants Pass was set to expire in September, and the work possibly will not be completed by the end of September. So that's what it is.
Well, from the county side, we've got a lot of infill going in up on the north end of town on Highland and whatnot.
Yeah,
so there's a lot going on. It's probably finding it hard to get a contractor.
Right, and so that's part of it. But to answer Commissioner Morgan's question, this actual site selections were based about existing transit stops that had no sidewalks. So there was curb and gutter, but there was no sidewalk. So that's what this project did, and it took the low-hanging fruit, essentially, and said, okay, we're going to put in sidewalks. So Rogue River
Avenue.
Just asking
for more time.
Yeah, it's just more time. There's not enough money to do what they originally planned, so they'll put in another application through the MPO to get more CMAQ dollars, and then we'll do this whole thing again.
Good, because there's money there that needs to be utilized.
Correct.
Yeah. On a totally different subject, but
before
still
you
in
do
your
that,
wheelhouse. Yeah.
Don't forget your thought.
Oh.
Can we put all four of these on the consent calendar? Do you guys have any objection?
No.
None.
All right, so we'll move that. Now keep going.
We'll change the budget anyway.
Just asking about the transit hub update. Uh-huh. Is there some dirt moving in our future?
Hopefully within the next 60 days is what I would guess. So
are they going to try and get it done this building season?
What I'm told, there's no building season for concrete, and the majority of this is concrete because where the road is now, where the existing sidewalks, curbs, all that will be pushed in, and then where we pull the buses in, it can't be asphalt. It has to be concrete, otherwise structurally it won't last.
Yeah.
So the perimeter and everything we need to operate, there is no construction season on. The only piece that has a construction season is essentially internal paving of the parking lot and the building of our customer service driver break building. So I don't anticipate that to be a problem. Once the outside is done, we'll move. We're out of here.
Yeah, you'll have a place to land.
That's all I need is a place to land. So I have to ask for the funds to be transferred from Federal Highway to Federal Transit, and so that letter's in progress right now. I had to put together a categorical exclusion for all the NEPA requirements, which is the environmental protection essentials to make sure that we're not spending federal money and ruining sensitive property.
Yes, we know the BS story.
Right. So you have to put all that. That in itself was probably 100 pages, and then I had to put together the application. So it's part of the fun part of the job. It's pushing paperwork, waiting for it to go through and get signed off on. So 60 days, hopefully, I'm busting to get out of here. So not only am I dealing with that, but ODOT also is looking at construction here, not this year, but next year, for the pedestrian crossings and some bulb outs and whatever they have planned. Right. So I got to get out of here.
Sure.
So that's where that's at.
Good. Gosh, we're gonna miss it. I mean, there's an awful lot goes on out there. It's very entertaining.
Yeah, it'll be nice to move that.
Anytime we can look out our window and see activity.
Do we have any planned signage out here to say bus shelter moved, walk the 2 blocks that way?
Yeah, the plan is the shelter and a bus stop will always be here. There's always a need for clients to come in to access county facilities,
right. But it won't be
on work release.
The high traffic.
It'll be one route, right. So every other route will be pushed down 2 blocks down to the south. Okay. So there will be signage and everything stating that where we're going.
It'll still be a spoke, not the hub.
Right.
That's a good. That's a good analogy. It's a spoke, not the hub.
So no, good. Thanks, Scott.
You're welcome.
So JJ's up next with HR, first job description update for 2 positions in public health and also in juvenile justice. I see that Jim is still here. You want to do the juvenile justice first?
Yeah, juvenile justice first.
Hello, Jim.
Hello again.
Hello.
So this is a supervisor position in juvenile justice. A challenge that they're having currently is they don't have a supervisor who can make decisions on the weekends. And so quite often when something goes down, the supervisors are having their phones blow up, and they're having a hard time having actual days off. And so having someone with the authority to make decisions on the weekend is a valuable asset. But they don't necessarily need someone to be a supervisor 5 days. They really need it 2 days. So this is kind of a mid-level supervisor, lower than the current one. So it'll be, you know, acting as the supervisor on the weekend and then doing a lot of the casework the rest of the week.
You're not adding an employee.
They're eliminating an existing position that's open.
Job description and their pay.
Well, they're eliminating a current open position, replacing it with this one. The cost differential is a few thousand bucks a year. So it's very nominal cost differential, but it'll give them the structure that they need to be more effective on the weekends.
Right, and clean up the off time.
Yeah, just a little bit of history. So this, the open position has been funded and in the budget for the second year in a row now. When we reopened, we purposely did not fill it because it was originally designed for in our probation officer division. And I didn't want to fill it just for the sake of having a position. We wanted to see if the work was going to be there to justify it.
Yeah.
Turned out it didn't. But on the weekends, when all of the admin go home, the teachers go home, we're left with a core of 4 group life counselors on shift. So having that working supervisor, it also allows us more flexibility to get the kids in the community, go on outings, do things like that. And it's the model. Every facility around the state has some type of low-level manager on the weekends on site. And we've kind of stumbled through without that. And it looks like we just don't need the position in probation, but we do. We do need it over there. So,
where's the funding source?
It's in the budget now. So what this would be so similar to the way we cost out, like my job, for instance, where I spend my time, it's 50% in court and field probation, 25% our residential and 25% in our detention center, because my time is split
right.
all over the place.
And your funding is split.
So this position would be 50%, or actually, again, 25% residential, 25% detention, and the other 50%. What we're going to do with this, it won't be an additional manager ever. It'll be a 410 position, and we'll just move around the days off for two other managers. So we won't have a single day of the week where we're just adding a manager that's in addition.
You're just moving people.
We're moving them around. So mm-hmm. so Brad, my deputy director, he does 410s with Wednesday off. We'll move him to Friday off, and this person will work Friday and do the case management that he does. So that's just an example.
Yeah.
I have no problem with it.
Yeah, sounds good. Sounds like a fix.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the...
we can post.
Yeah.
Okay.
So the other job descriptions are just an update to public health nurse positions. Currently, the job description is broad in scope, and Director Weber wanted to have two job descriptions, one for the communicable disease aspect of nursing and then one for the immunization. And you could actually have one position that does both job descriptions, or you can have one nurse that does one. It depends on what the caseload requires. But having more specific job descriptions that spell out, this is the role of an immunization nurse, this is the role of a communicable disease nurse, allows them to be more specific and hold the employee.
Can they fill in for each other when one goes on vacation?
If you have two people, if you have two people, they could, yes. Or you could have one position that actually does both duties, depending on what the needs of the department are. But it just allows them to have more specific job duties spelled out than what is in the current job description, which is kind of broad. Currently, it's you're a public health nurse and you do public health stuff. And it has one line that says, you know, you cover communicable disease, but it doesn't spell out what that means. And it has another line that says you do immunization, but it doesn't really spell out what that means. So having a more specified job description, he found a lot of value to. So that's the purpose of it. No budgetary impact at all. It's just updated job description.
I just don't want to, as flexible as we have to be in this organization, I just don't want somebody to say, no, I'm a sheet metal man. I'm not going to go out and work on.
Oh, no. Any nurse that we have.
I'm a specialist.
Yeah, any of the nurses we have can do any of the nursing duties.
Okay.
They're all registered nurses, and they're all BSN, so Bachelor of Science in Nursing. So they can do any of the nursing duties.
Okay. That's all I needed to know.
Yeah.
We've had quite a restructuring in public health.
Yeah.
I mean, if you think about all the changes that have happened in the last 2.5 years.
Yeah.
And I want to say the communicable disease person was somebody that was working partially in that role and partially in another, and, mm-hmm. and then the immunizations coordination. Was it one person doing both, or was it?
For the last couple of years, our communicable disease has been a part-time employee who retired and then came back part-time.
That's it.
And then she's like, I'm going to retire for real this time. And we're very sad because she's a very good, terrific employee. So part of this will be spelling out this is exactly what is required in communicable disease.
Okay.
And the immunization has been piecemealed out with different folks. So.
Okay.
All right.
I have one I'd like permission of them to have you work on.
Sure.
One of the things that came up last night, and I was trying to think through options, where we had our weekly business session up in Wolf Creek, there's a high amount of abandoned vehicles on public right-of-ways.
Okay.
Other communities use something called a community service officer or a code enforcement officer to tag those vehicles for tow and follow up with getting a hold of the registered owners and then having them towed.
Yeah, it's pretty common in cities that have that position.
It is, but there's a couple counties that have also done it and contracted with cities to do it. Umatilla is mm-hmm. one of those. But I was going to throw it out in the matters from commissioners to see what you guys thought of potentially, since it's something that is not high enough on the radar of a sheriff's deputy, community service officers can report to admin or code enforcement or community development or law enforcement. They can go anywhere.
Yeah, they're non-deputized.
Correct. So,
but would they have the authority to call DMV? Because I can't call DMV unless I've gone through a couple of contacts over the years and said, I found a car and this is the license number on it. Tell me who owns it. And they're not supposed to do that, but they call it in. Hey, yeah, so-and-so, and this is their address and phone. But would that person, if he's not deputized, would he be able to contact DMV and find out where the registered owner is of those vehicles? That's going to be pretty important.
There's a whole process of putting together the program to do it right.
Okay.
But I thought I'd give you a heads up that I was going to be asking them about us maybe exploring it so that it would give you time to reach out to other places to see a county version and recommendations of a job description or something like that, just as a heads up.
Along that topic, one of the people last night, he said, I said, you know, it's expensive to tow these vehicles and get rid of them. And he said, what you really need to do, and it's just a suggestion, he says, all wrecking services are on a rotation. So they respond to a wreck, you know, this guy's going to get it one time, the next day, and it's on this rotation. He said, you put them on an abatement program or whatever it is. For every four wrecks that they respond to, that they're called out to, they have to donate one car extraction at the will of the county.
So you're the liaison for the sheriff's office.
Right.
I would recommend that you contact the sheriff and ask him who are the partners with the tow rotation. And I believe state police heads it up. But a while back when they were having issues with getting tow companies to take the RVs, there was a group
RVs are...
I hear you, but there's a group other than us that handles that contract, but the sheriff is the contact for the county, I believe. So it might be something that you can reach out to the sheriff to see if he can negotiate that group to start talking about if there's some other options there. But that was job description related. We can go back to the other duties later, but I just thought I would throw that out there as far as what other counties have done versus just city programs. And I know that just in our city alone, it's been in multiple departments at different times. So the possibility of the authority of where it could go based on what we need it to be so that we can process vehicles, it would require legal getting involved in going that process. But okay, sorry, I won't bug you.
One other quick thing just came up this morning. So for the interviews tomorrow, we have an outside person who's on the panel. That person canceled yesterday. She had family emergency that came up. I got a replacement, and the replacement canceled this morning because she couldn't move a meeting after all.
This is an outside person.
Yeah, it was for the because we were going to have someone from the outside be on the interview panel for tomorrow.
Did anybody in our nobody in our pool out there this morning.
He's got more to report.
There's more?
Yeah, so my question, did you have any ideas on anyone else you'd like me to reach out to try to, I mean, it's short notice because it's tomorrow.
Oh, wait, the one you talked to couldn't?
She was going to move a couple meetings and couldn't do it.
Okay, so the original person that was going to be on there that has the funeral conflict, she gave me a recommendation.
Okay.
All right, so Kate has a funeral to go to.
Lasky?
No.
Dwyer.
Kate Dwyer. Sorry.
I did the same names.
When I heard, I called and left her my condolences and then also asked if she had a recommendation. Because of what I had heard you say that you liked that you were having a representative of the Valley.
Sure.
She recommended we check with Dave Valenzuela at Three Rivers School District regarding Shelly Quick, who is their executive administrator out there. She said that she used to be the one out at Evergreen School, so she's highly respected in the Valley, and she's a top-notch, exceptional executive manager, administrator.
Yeah.
So is the job function that we're hiring
similar, if she's able to do it.
So that was her recommendation of somebody who's got Valley connection and extreme knowledge of the job that she thinks would be an outstanding recommendation if you could get her at last minute. The other one I had recommended was potentially Colleen Martin, who had been a small business owner, chamber member. She's now the state chamber. If we're looking for, you know, just an outside person of something like that. But Shelly Quick from Three Rivers School District is who Kate Dwyer recommended.
Okay.
Yeah, well, then I think Colleen's a decent backup. If she can't do it, have them try for Colleen as a second.
So if you call Three Rivers School District admin, she probably is who will answer.
Yeah.
And I don't know what they'd have to arrange and schedule, but that was who Kate Dwyer recommended.
Okay.
And you can say that's where the recommendation came from.
Okay. And it's, what was her name again?
Shelley Quick.
Shelley Quick.
Okay. I can, and actually, I'll forward you her email she just sent out on the school board meeting notification, so you have email address.
Oh, perfect.
And phone number. So, but I don't know if you... The recommendation was ask Dave if he could spare Shelley.
Yeah.
And that she would be an outstanding addition. So I said, oh, we got somebody, thanks anyhow.
And then this morning, just kidding.
Okay.
I'm out. Back out.
Well, you got 24 hours, just get on it. What are you doing sitting here?
There we go. If you could send
23
me,
hours.
If you have Colleen's number, because I don't have her number. Right.
Yep.
I could reach out to her as well if I can't.
Yeah, I think she's on the front of the newspaper this week. Yeah. A little realtor box.
There you go.
get her business phone anyway.
And if you guys have other recommendations, I don't want to squash anymore. Let's see. Okay. I'll get this forwarded to you.
All right.
And
that's all I have. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right.
All right, we're going to go back to item A, emergency services, grant agreement between Josephine County and Grants Pass Department of Public Safety Fire Rescue Division, and we have Sarah Rubricht, our emergency manager.
Apologize for my tardiness this morning. I had a project out at the SAR building that took far longer than it was supposed to.
Hello, Sheriff.
I have video and pictures, if, you know, you should come out and visit sometime.
Disruptor.
Sorry. I saw that. That wasn't a friendly stare, by the way.
I love the sheriff.
That was a...
Thank you.
Why don't we all roll our eyes at once?
Thank you for making it feel like a Friday.
So what you have before you is an agreement to be signed by all three commissioners. It is for an additional FireWise coordinator. Currently, we have an agreement with Oregon Department of Forestry. They host a FireWise coordinator for all of Josephine County. It's paid for by the county with Title III funds. This year, Tyler Averett, who is our contract employee with Oregon Department of Forestry, has been completely overwhelmed with the amount of requests for home evaluations, home assessments, new FireWise communities. I believe there's currently 16 in Josephine County at this time. And it's not just the upfront work of getting them to become FireWise, but then the ongoing maintenance of those. Yeah. And then presenting on a regular basis to those neighborhoods and keeping their momentum and their excitement up. So last year, a couple months ago, we started looking into what it would take to supplement Tyler's workload and would like to spread the love, if you will, and talk to City of Grants Pass Fire, and they are very interested in hosting the second position for the FireWise coordinator. And
what does that mean?
That means that...
Describe hosting this.
Sure. So they will manage and care for that employee and then bill the county, and we will pay for their wages and miscellaneous costs that come along with that, just like we do for ODF. So the person is housed at their facility, drives their vehicle, wears their uniform, but does work throughout the county in conjunction with Tyler. So Tyler... just because he's ODF, he can still do work with FireWise communities inside the city limits and vice versa. The City of Grants Pass employee could do work with FireWise communities outside of the City of Grants Pass as well. So what that does for us is it keeps me from having to manage another employee and another in-house program.
They're just going to send us an invoice, so we're going to pay it.
Yep.
Oversight?
Yep. The daily oversight and management of the employee is through the City of Grants Pass, just as the daily oversight of Tyler is with ODF. Program oversight is in coordination with my department.
Okay.
So County Legal has reviewed the contract. It is almost word for word as the ODF contract, and it has been signed by City of Grants Pass and myself, and it's up for your turn.
If they go to a fire district, how does that change? Because the fire department will no longer be a city function.
Sure. I think we'll just have to reevaluate the contract at that time. If that happens, then you know we're more than able to.
Because I see a fire district. I don't want the fire people to think that this program is a source of revenue for something else that they're doing.
Sure. Yeah, that makes sense.
And it's all actually going where it's going, and not. Well, gee, you know, we're going to charge them $80 an hour now because we need a little extra money for, you know, cable TV went up to $1.95 a month, and so now we need to get that somewhere, so we'll just do it through the county and by sending them a bill.
Yeah, it's actually the dollar amount for the next year is very clearly spelled out.
$119,000 or so?
Yeah, they cannot go.
$119,000.
But that includes.
Pay and benefits.
Yeah, pay and benefits and vehicle.
Travel and.
And it's very comparable to what happens with ODF. The only difference between this position and ODF's position is in the summertime, the way ODF operates is in the summertime, if Tyler is pulled off to go to a fire, he still goes to that fire and doesn't charge the county for his time while he's working on the fire, only while he's working on the FireWise program. So
I should let you know that I got a message just this morning while we were sitting here from one of the residents off of New Hope Road who said, FireWise folks came to our neighborhood last weekend to chip. It was very difficult to chip our debris, and Tyler did a great job. And I don't know the timing of why I got this morning, but I just thought I would pass that along on the ODF guy.
The chipper that she's speaking of is a chipper that I purchased last month with Title III funds, and it's been going around to different communities as quickly as it can to chip neighborhood debris. So that's been a super popular.
Any movement on burn days and stuff? Because that's one of the big things that, you know, you get all your stuff piled up, and then it's a no-burn day, and it's a no-burn day, and it's a no-burn day. Even when it's pouring down rain, it's a no-burn day.
So
it's a no-burn day. We don't have an air quality that says it's a no-burn day.
Yeah, but who enforces it?
Huh?
Right, but
DEQ
the good
says if it's a burn day, but now we are in fire season, so there is no burning for fire season.
So there is no burn day.
Nope.
And I've got all this stuff piled up, and now what do I do with it?
You wait.
I wait till it burns.
You get your neighborhood to be a FireWise community, and Tyler or this new person will bring the chipper out and get some chipping done.
How did he run? I'm not even going to ask how he runs a chipper when it's a no motorized vehicle type thing during burn day. I can't run a chainsaw.
He absolutely will not run the chipper if it's not allowed according to the burn criteria.
There's just so many rules and regulations. This thing is going to be failure after failure after failure because we have too many people deciding what's safe and what isn't safe and when to do it and when I can and can't. And so, therefore, my hands are tied, and I'm sitting there with a whole bunch of debris, and it's an no-burn day again.
Mm-hmm. So, if you have debris, you can take it to one of the compost places if you want to haul it. Those are options during.
It's always something I got to do before anybody else does their job.
Perfect.
No, that's actually technically your job to take care of your own property. That's all I'm saying. Is something.
But I can't. But I'm one of my hands are tied, and I can't clear my own property, other than by taking it to another government entity. I got a problem with that.
So they're not government entities that take the green debris. There's Southern Oregon Compost. That's a private company. The Murphy one is a private company. There are options for landowners if you have the means of getting a truck and a trailer, which is probably why a lot of it doesn't happen. And you have to pay
it been
to
done
take
in
it
April.
To those places for them to take it. But, I mean,
I'm just frustrated. Yeah. You know, there's always an answer by government. I get it.
Yeah, that's a government answer. Anyhow, do you guys have any objections to the city being involved with hosting the other FireWise person?
Nope. That sounds very fire appropriate.
Is there any movement on the third one?
There hasn't been a conversation about a third one.
Okay, not FireWise.
Oh, no.
The plan implementer. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Still chipping away. We got distracted by the other fire mitigation issue.
Okay.
Awesome.
They don't know the update on that. Did you guys see the email from Jason P. Roberts on the press release?
I just saw that it was there. I haven't opened it or read it yet.
Okay. So after reaching out to PUC and Pacific Power, they asked if we could do a joint. So we did a joint press release that went out last night at 8:30.
Well,
it's well written.
That's good.
Yeah,
it was time to let that cat out. So
it's out.
I like that.
PUC.
She never did respond to me.
Oh no, but I did.
You said don't wait for her.
Yes, because she said if you need it. She had sent me an email, so we were going forward without it.
Perfect.
So PUC offered to give a quote. Pacific Power involved. So
I can appreciate reaching out to them before as well. Thank you for that. That was very professional.
I wish they would have put in the press release the fact that this is in response. PP&L is not doing this just because of, but this is in response to the history of fire, where they wouldn't have had to do any of this 50 years ago because we didn't have wildland fires and huge fires in rural areas. Now we are going to have fire because of the way they attack it and the way the undergrowth growth and everything. So this is in response to poor management over the years, not PP&L getting an upper hand and being big brother, because that's where people out here are saying, they just want to shut my power off. That's all they want to shut my power. They have to do it. They have to do something like this in response to the way the fire theater has gone and changed over the last 50 years. They wouldn't have had to do this years ago because the fire would have never even come close to burning in rural areas, and now it does. Now it's coming to town. It's right outside town, and it's coming to town. Because it isn't stopped on public land outside of town.
And they may need this tool in their toolbox, but I pray they never use it.
Amen. Yeah, but it also adds an element that they, when they see it necessary to do that, they're going to bring crews in from all over.
That's what they say.
None of that is set. It's not what their plan is. It's just that we're going to shut your power. People read line one, we're going to shut your power.
Nobody has seen their plan yet.
Because it's not finished.
It's not.
They haven't seen their own plan.
No, it's not even out in draft yet. So I think I hear exactly what you're saying, and I think there's a lot of things that we probably...
I think your rollout's premature.
Could have, yes.
So our staff said that, and we have said that to them, too.
Yeah, I think we're all in agreement on that. Yeah. I had lunch yesterday with a gentleman.
It's going to happen.
Deeply involved.
We have to figure out how to work best with
what our best response is to it. Yeah.
So while you're sitting here, and we did buy a chipper, and we do have the fireways programs, we're using our SRS dollars, Title III, to fund those fireways positions. We had a guy come to our weekly business session a week or two ago, and he gave me a whole disc of photos. When you got down to what his concerns were, and I don't know if Dan actually, did you go out there and see the property?
Yeah.
Essentially, what I could tell from the photos is the neighbor has a bunch of needle trees right along the fence line, and it's in Merlin, so the houses are near each other, and they cross his property by 8-10 feet. He's elderly, uses a cane, doesn't have a lot of mobility. Are there any helps for... it made me wonder about reaching out to one of the nonprofit groups or service organizations in the community to say, anybody want to start a cleanup project for elderly, you know?
To expound on what, because I went out there, and the reason the neighbor next door is not going to clean anything up is that's a visual barrier for their marijuana grow. And they planted those trees along that fence a long, long time ago because they've been doing this for a long, long time. And it's conifers. And now they're clear over the fence. They're almost up against the guy's house. He's got the required setback, but these things have spread. And he's tried to deal with them and say, hey, you know, we'll get this all cleaned up for you. No, you're going to stay off my property. So if that thing gets going, it's going to take his house out.
Dan,
and I said it probably.
He has a right to limb up his side of the yard.
Yes, exactly. He has a right to limb up his side.
But are there any helps or any companies? Does he just need to call a tree company and pay for somebody to do it?
That's an option.
Are there any
I suggested to him to get like A to Z out there, have them shave that side at the fence line, and then sue her civilly for it.
Awesome. So I just didn't know if somebody says they don't have the money or the
I didn't think we
ability.
Had any, we don't have any programs that
that's what I'm not asking currently, if there's any
not
programs.
Currently.
But he was asking about ordinances and stuff. Can we draft an ordinance that says you will maintain a safe distance back from your neighbor? Kind of like we have in the marijuana ordinance where you can't...
A buffer?
DMZ of some sort.
The number one complaint I get from people related to fire is, well, I did this on mine, but my neighbor's got 2 feet of grass, or my neighbor's got this, what do you do?
You can say the same thing as with county property, BLM property, and Forest Service property. We can say the same thing about our neighbors.
You can say everything. But I didn't have any answer for him to say, well, yeah, call these people and they're going to come out and do that. I said, it's on you. You know the problem. I said, I wouldn't be standing here if you didn't recognize what the problem is. The tree that's behind your house on the next door neighbor, go over and explain to him that those big pitch pockets on the side of that bullpine mean it's going to die. Yeah. And just let him know that when it dies and it falls on my house, you've been forewarned with a letter that that tree, I feel it's a danger to my house. If you let it grow and it falls on my house, you're going to get it.
So I know that Rural Metro was working on finding some options. I can check in with Charlie and find out if he had any success in finding some options for those elderly folks that can't do that physical labor themselves. Another option specific to Merlin is Merlin Fire Smart, or Fire Smart Merlin. They're at the Janet.
Yeah, I have her contact.
Yeah, she has been working on providing and finding and providing some resources to neighbors that can't do that themselves. So they've all been kind of pitching in and helping out where folks can't do that themselves. So that's another option. I'm happy to follow up on any of that you want me to. So just let me know.
I think
your idea is good too, Dan.
I mean, and that's something that potentially we'd maybe look at if there's another program to develop that, since FireWise requires 8 neighbors. And sometimes the neighbors can pressure that one that's a holdout. If they can't, is there any other programs we can look at trying to do something similar for defensible space to help folks that don't have the ability?
There have been some assistance to firefighter grants that we can get with Title II funding. There have been some other funding opportunities that have been specific to certain income folks. They haven't been available for a while. But I'll check in with ODF and see if they know if any more of that's on the horizon. But that's specific to fuels mitigation for specific income brackets. It's awfully helpful.
Thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
Sheriff, anything we can do for you?
Nope.
Not for the fun of it?
Nope.
Just visiting.
Question for you.
I was over on the dispatch center, so I thought I'd swing by and make sure this house didn't burn down yet.
We wondered. We don't have our defensible space.
Right.
I should, while you're here, because I have something I want to ask you while you're here. Under other business, do we have anything?
Apparently we have a discussion with the sheriff.
Well, I was going to put that under board business matter for
okay.
commissioners.
Sounds good. I don't have any other business.
Thanks, sir.
It's always a pleasure.
I do have to run. I got to get to Williams by 11, so.
Okay. So last night we had our Wolf Creek weekly business session.
One of his cars.
And we had a lot of people talking about abandoned cars up in both on county property,
yes.
and public right-of-way.
Yes.
And feeling like that's kind of, they said they even brought up a specific one that they followed a truck and they found it came from Glendale. It's specifically a dumping ground.
Yes.
It was stolen and all that kind of stuff. And I was walking out and I paused and I was like, wait a second. Some communities and counties have kind of code enforcement CSO positions that handle just tagging vehicles and contacting tow companies and
yes.
stuff like that. And wondered if that would be something that we should maybe look at either in conjunction with our code enforcement who gets complaints or mm-hmm. your office or whoever. I didn't think about the where yet, just that maybe this program that's not, so deputies can still be clear to go do other stuff, but maybe we look at a role of a CSO/code enforcement person that would just be on the public right-of-ways just to tag vehicles. And
yeah, currently our volunteers do that.
Okay.
Our volunteers don't work 6, 7 days a week, obviously. They're on maybe one, maybe two. So we create a list for them to go out and identify those vehicles. The difficulty is what people get upset about is that call comes in, the vehicle's identified, and then it sits there for 4, 5, 6 more days, you know, because they got to tag it for 3. So maybe they don't get to it for 4 or 5. Then it sits for 3 more, and then finally it gets towed the next time it comes out. So it's not efficient like they like to see, but it is happening. And our deputies do as well go out and tag vehicles. So it's getting done. It's just on a lower priority.
If you'd have been there last night, there was probably 4 people that could take you to I don't know how many chop shops and stolen cars.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them are on our property. We got some property up Coyote Creek. They said there's 11 to 15 cars on there that have been, they're stolen. They strip all the stuff they want. They tow them onto the county property and set them on fire to destroy all the evidence.
We are happy to go to those if
and these people were saying, you know, you want to know where the chop shops are, we can show them to you. But nobody seems to care about stolen vehicles anymore. Because, you know, hey, the insurance is going to cover it. It's blue-collar crime. Don't worry about it.
All they gotta do is notify us. We'll send a deputy. Yeah,
and we gave them that message.
We actually said call it in. Yeah. But I thought I'd ask since you're here. I was going to bring up with you guys. What do you think about having a lower level position that can just handle that kind of stuff? Or unless I didn't realize the volunteers
can concentrate on that.
That's not a problem. I mean, most public safety agencies have a CSO type level handling county ordinances and towing vehicles and traffic crashes even that are non-injury type of stuff. It's a fantastic.
Are they a full deputy armed?
No, not at all.
So like our CSO,
they wear a different uniform. Just like the yellow shirts.
For the city.
Same thing.
I know I know Pendleton Police had a program and Umatilla Sheriff's Office contracted with the city, or Umatilla County rather contracted with them for that stuff, or different counties. And so it was one of those things that just last night after hearing, it's like, well, as far as could that be a help to have that level?
Yeah, I think the reason probably it's not there right now is just due to finances and, mm-hmm. and what's the priority. Is a deputy in the street more important than a CSO tagging a car?
Right.
So that's kind of my angle on it.
Yeah.
I'm more than willing CSO
can take care of something that everybody thinks the deputy should be doing, I think it is a valuable position.
Yeah, I'm not going to disagree with you.
So to say weigh one against mm-hmm. the other one, mm-hmm. I'm not going to go down that road.
And I kind of hear you. And sometimes that livability issue, that blight that somebody sees every day
that's
is
more
important
than
somebody else
getting
hurt down the street.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So I totally agree with you.
I have a question. Who handles the rotation for towing companies? State?
State maintains the list.
That's what I mean. Who maintains the list?
State maintains
the list. I brought
it
up last night, and I was bringing it up a minute ago. I was told to talk to you, and I was going to talk to you, so I don't need to talk to you now, but I'll talk to you right now.
Okay.
For instance, on the rotation, if a towing company gets called for he's on the rotation four different times, and he's contracted by the state police or sheriff or whatever to go tow that car at an accident.
Right.
He owes the county, the state, whatever, he owes us one free tow for an abated car.
We'd like to propose four
leads he gets, he gets to do a freebie.
Since when they get non-preference tows, they kind of usually charge more for non-preference rotation, the companies and stuff like that. The recommendation from one of the citizens last night, talked to each of us individually, was that we work into that contract and reach out to state police or city, whoever does the contract, that part of the program is every fourth tow, you take an abatement or something like that.
Well, they take the abatements irregardless. And I think that's in their business and their mindset. They know they're going to get three or four good tows, and then they're going to get this garbage one. That's just kind of...
So it's already happening.
It's already really happening. It's a natural understanding. I haven't had any issues.
I'll spend no more time on it.
I like it. What's that?
I said I won't spend any more time on it. If it's already happening,
it is.
Sounds like it is.
Yeah. It is. The only difficulty we have been happening in the past has been the campers and the trailers. That's becoming a real problem, has been a real problem. Mm-hmm. Historically, I forget the fund that ex-Commissioner Hare was using for those from county funds. It was some fund.
It was solid waste agency.
There you go. I think it was that. And he would help citizens with that process. Because sometimes it's $1,000 just to get rid of those things.
Golly.
I had one offered to me the other day where they got a dynamite big block in a 400 turbine automatic. I said, I want it. I said, you can have it for free. I said, I can't get rid of it.
No, that's a problem.
I pull the engine motor out. And we're dealing with trends out. That's fantastic.
There was an individual.
It costs me more to get rid of the shell than it does.
Yeah.
There was one that was dumped on the property at Lincoln and Upper River Road. It was actually dragged from about a quarter mile down the road and just dumped on a piece of property.
That's where the grain used to be?
Yeah, exactly.
And that's... And Fritz Flock owns that.
Correct. And I ended up sicking Deputy Simon on it. He identified the guy who dumped it. And said,
you take it home?
Oh, it's gone now.
Yeah.
Real quick, just a couple other things. One of the other requests that kind of came up after y'all left, because the fire department all came back out and spent another hour with me, Thank you. Good to see you. Told their side of kind of the reports of what was going on up there and all. But asked if we would do that quarterly up there. And that they have a community hall where the pancake breakfast the morning of the thing that they'd be willing to use if we wanted to do quarterly meetings. So, which made me think, we had had a request by a citizen to do two night meetings a month. Mm-hmm. And what if one of those night meetings a quarter is CJ, one a quarter is Williams, one a quarter is Wolf Creek, and then it leaves other ones here. I was thinking,
I think it's a great idea.
And also,
if we want attendance, we got to go outside of here.
Isn't that amazing, the turnout? And they told us that was a low turnout because they didn't think we'd actually show up.
Yeah, they didn't think it was for real.
And it was hot, yeah.
It was great.
They didn't know we were buying, too. So
great time, gosh. Good food.
So then the other one is on Monday at AOC. The census committee topic came up, and I couldn't remember where we left it. Were you the one following up?
I'm making contact. I'm following through with the new person.
Okay, because if not, Lori Stegman, who's the Multnomah County Commissioner that started the presentation, offered that anything they could do to help other counties get going, they would be happy to offer. So Lori Stegman, S-T-E-G-M-A-N-N, I think, or maybe just one. She...
What county?
Multnomah. But she's the governor's pick to head it up statewide, and they got a. But they're willing to help any counties with the process. So I wanted to follow up with that topic.
Cool. Thank you.
I did hear Tuesday about Lane County pulling out of the ONC Association.
Lane County.
So that was an interesting.
Did they have a reason?
They have lots of reasons.
Do they?
Yeah. But it was a...
They've been rattling about that for a number of years.
It's actually, there's a directed effort in that community that they went after certain commissioners to replace them with opposite-thinking commissioners to go after a kind of bigger agenda issue. But
Their new agenda is following more along University of Oregon model.
Or the Oregon State.
Well, I want to be mindful of you guys' travel times. So those were the things on my list.
My one thing is that Wolf Creek event that Manny talked about last night, the motorcycle. Would you guys give me permission to talk to Parks about seeing what we could do to get that back on?
I think that would be good. We've got to address that.
I've already been talking to Sarah. Yeah, she has some concerns that they refuse to address. And so if I can talk them into addressing those concerns.
And the fire department talked to them afterwards, after you all left last night, too. One of the things, there was some more to some of the story that wasn't maybe presented.
Oh, sure.
And the...
We got one side of it.
So the fire department isn't willing to partner with them for first aid and a water truck anymore, so they'd have to find their separate things. One of the recommendations was an external security or something like that. I think not policing themselves would maybe be something to consider.
I recommended to Spanky that you have a pre-function meeting before people get into the beer and explain the rules of where the smoking area is and candles on the picnic table for the massage.
Right, if we want this event to go forward, this is the year we have to do it.
So I would absolutely endorse you negotiating with the parks director, and I recommend you reach out to the Wolf Creek chief or lieutenant for some other information.
Do you got his name?
Chief is Steve Scruggs.
Okay.
But I also think it's awful strong to say you're just banned from all Josephine County parks.
So there was more to that story as well.
Yeah.
And part of it is you know how you do a mass gathering event and you say where you're going to put everything? That's not what they have been doing. And so with accountability,
there
wasn't.
More to the story. But another thing that I didn't like was forestalling them 3 to 4 months. If you're going to turn them down, just say, no, we're going to turn you down.
That I agree.
Find another venue.
Find another venue. And she's holding up their progress.
She was in touch with the fire department and says she had to run it by the commissioners. I don't recall
ever being run by
commissioners.
And I think something.
And she didn't run it by me.
To get banned from all parks ever.
It's pretty rough.
Is one of those things that I think that that's something that should be run by commissioners before.
Because it's going to come back to us as it did yesterday.
So, okay, if there's anything else.
No, there is not.